This is Free Speech Radio News for Tuesday, November 6, 2012. In Los Angeles, I'm Dorian Marina. Coming up, voters across the U.S. head to the polls in national and local elections. We'll get reports from Chicago and Boston, where Barack Obama and Mitt Romney are spending the evening, and the battleground states of Ohio, Florida, Colorado, and Wisconsin. Those stories and more coming up after this news.
I'm Nell Abram with FSR in Headlines. Another storm is brewing along the Atlantic coast. This one's a nor'easter. Emergency officials in Brick Township, New Jersey, have issued a mandatory evacuation, ordering residents in low-lying coastal areas to be out by 6 p.m. local time today. The area was devastated last week by Hurricane Sandy. Forecasters now say the storm will be less intense than previously thought, but will still likely bring snow to the I-95 corridor. In New Jersey and New York, more than 1 million people are still without power. Tens of thousands are without homes, yet many are making their way to the polls today. Caroline Lewis reports from Coney Island.
Hurricane Sandy shut down 60 polling sites throughout New York City today, leaving voters scrambling. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo issued an executive order allowing displaced voters to cast ballots at any polling site, and shuttle bus service to alternate sites began at 5:30 this morning. Ralph Frangetti boarded along with two other passengers waiting outside a shuttered school in Coney Island.
This is it. They tell me the school is closed. They're going to shuttle me down to the go vote, and I guess it's shuttling me back. My house is trashed. Everything is trashed.
The shuttle delivered passengers to PS 370 in Coney Island, which was accepting voters from four different sites. But voter Varel Maxwell said she was taken to PS 370 in a shuttle bus, only to be told she had to go elsewhere.
So they put me in this bus and they dropped me here. And I've been standing in there before 7:30. And you know how long that has been? And finally I walk around and around and I was told that I need to go to PS 100. And that's where I'm going.
Voting sites were changed in parts of Brooklyn, the Rockaways, Manhattan, the Bronx, and Staten Island. Caroline Lewis, FSRN, Coney Island.
Before making landfall in the U.S., Hurricane Sandy plowed through Cuba, Jamaica, and Haiti, where the World Food Program today called for financial help. WFP spokesperson Elizabeth Beers.
The World Food Program urgently calling for more than $20 million to fund the food assistance for over 425,000 people in Haiti.
Emergency officials in India said today that about 70,000 people in Andhra Pradesh are in emergency shelters after a storm last week caused widespread flooding. At least 25 people died. Malawi's Minister of Justice has temporarily suspended the country's anti-gay laws pending a parliamentary debate. Malawi's relatively new president, Joyce Banda, made clear early in her administration that she would seek to decriminalize homosexuality in the East African nation. Same-sex relationships were punishable by as much as 5 years in jail for women, 14 for men. Gay rights advocates are cautiously optimistic that the move forbears a full repeal of the repressive laws. Evidence in an inquiry into the August deaths of dozens of striking South African miners reveals that weapons were placed in their hands after they were already dead. Pictures taken by police hours after the killings show a machete in at least one victim's hand, yet in a photo taken hours earlier of the same corpse, there is no weapon. Further video evidence reveals at least one victim was handcuffed, and others appear to have been shot execution style. All told, 46 people were killed during weeks of strikes at the Marikana mine near Johannesburg, 34 on a single day of violence. Two police were among the dead. Officials originally arrested hundreds of striking miners for the killings. Those charges were later dropped. And U.S. voters in many communities around the country today are considering non-binding ballot measures concerning corporate personhood and money in politics. FSRN's Jess Burns has the story.
The grassroots organizations Move to Amend and Common Cause have led the charge nationwide for a constitutional amendment that includes two main provisions. Money is not speech and corporations are not people. The push began after the 2010 Citizens United decision by the Supreme Court, which has led to unprecedented corporate spending in this election. Across the U.S., local chapters of Move to Amend have convinced officials to place advisory questions on the ballot to gauge community support. More than 200 such governmental measures have passed so far, and dozens more are currently being considered. Rachel Osretich is with the Corvallis, Oregon chapter of Move to Amend. She wants the national amendment passed within the next 10 years.
Most of these citizen grassroots movements take a long time, and look at how long it took for the women to get the right to vote.
Osretich says the next step is to push for a statewide resolution. About a dozen states have approved some variation of the group's amendment. Jess Burns, FSRN, Eugene.
For FSRN from Tampa, Florida, I'm Nell Abram.
I'm Dorian Marina in Los Angeles. President Barack Obama returned to his home state of Illinois after a long and expensive campaign that wrapped up last night in Iowa. Today he showed up at a campaign office in Chicago to thank volunteers and called a few voters in Wisconsin. Though many locals say today's election doesn't feel as historic or exciting as Obama's victory 4 years ago, they're still anxious for the president to win a second term in office. From Chicago, FSRN's Alice Olstein reports.
At a multi-precinct polling place at Chicago's South Loop Elementary School, voters came out on a cold, clear day to cast their vote, many of them hoping to give the president another 4 years.
And we're just out here trying to get Obama elected. It's going to be a close race, but hoping he get it.
That's Ronald Fortney, a volunteer with the Ward 4 Democrats, who spent most of Tuesday morning handing out sample ballots as voters trickled in. A native of Hyde Park who has seen a lot of Obama over the years, he says he's been trying to convince disappointed friends to give the president more time in office.
He's done as much as he can do. Everybody's talking about what he didn't do, but the things that he did. Stimulus checks, trying to bail out the car companies and the banks. He's doing what he can do.
Local resident Susan Balson agreed, saying she blames Republicans in Congress for the lack of progress over the past 4 years.
That seemed to be their main agenda, thwarting Obama was more important than doing what was right for the American people. So I think he did pretty well considering, and I hope that he'll win and do a really good job in the next term.
For many voters, including local resident Deborah Carr, casting a ballot brought back memories of the 2008 election.
Just, you know, huge elation and excitement that our country had taken this amazing step forward. When we got the election results that night, I wasn't able to go to Grant Park, but I just sat on my couch and in my pajamas and cried.
She says this year feels different, partly because she's been disheartened by the political polarization and gridlock in Washington. Seeking to reclaim the same energy that carried him to victory in 2008, the president gave the final stump speech of what he said will be his final campaign at a rally in Des Moines, Iowa, late Monday night. With tears on his face, Obama asked supporters to give him another chance.
We've made real progress these past 4 years. But Iowa, we're here tonight because we've got more work to do. We're not done yet on this journey. We've got more road to travel. As long as there's a single American who wants a job but can't find one, as long as there are families working harder but still falling behind, as long as there's a child anywhere in Des Moines, anywhere in Iowa, anywhere in this country languishing in poverty, barred from opportunity, our work isn't done.
Tonight, the president will join thousands of reporters and supporters at the McCormick Place Convention Center on the shore of Lake Michigan. Outside the heavily secured complex, local immigrant rights activists will hold a march and vigil, both to celebrate the power of the Latino vote in this election and to begin pressuring the next president to pass immigration reform. Alice Olstein, FSRN, Chicago.
Republican challenger Mitt Romney campaigned in Ohio and Pennsylvania today before returning to Massachusetts to watch results and gather with supporters. While many eyes will be on the presidential candidate, two other races are also capturing national attention, a U.S. Senate race and a congressional district that could elect the first openly gay Republican member of the U.S. House. FSRN's Jessel Knorr brings us more from Boston.
Braving near-freezing temperatures, voters started lining up at polling stations at 6 a.m. in Boston today. 56-year-old retiree Carolyn Walker said she got up early so she could vote for President Obama.
This morning I got up at 3:30, I got in line by 6, and I was the first one in to go voting.
Some voters were drawn to polls to register their votes in the U.S. Senate race, where incumbent Republican Scott Brown is trying to keep his seat from Democratic challenger Elizabeth Warren. Dave Greenwald has been among the thousands of grassroots supporters who have volunteered for the Warren campaign across the state.
The country does better when the middle class does better. And Elizabeth Warren, she's been an advocate for the middle class. She's been fighting for the middle class for a long time. And I think she's going to be a senator really worthy of representing the people.
In the neighboring congressional district, Democratic Representative John Tierney faces former state senator Richard Tesai. If elected, Tesai would make history as the first openly gay Republican elected to Congress.
It's interesting, but, you know, that really shouldn't matter. I don't think that that should be your sexual orientation should be considered if you're a Democrat or a Republican. So,
28-year-old Jim Shelbourne, a financial analyst, says he's leaning towards Tesai even though he's a registered Democrat planning on voting for Obama and Warren.
I don't think Tierney has shown that we can kind of trust him. So with the whole gambling issue, and I think that Tesai has shown that he can do the job better.
Although state officials are expecting a record turnout and longer than usual lines were reported in many parts of the state, not everyone is voting this year. 32-year-old construction worker Sheldon Williams says he's been disappointed after voting for Obama in 2008.
You know, usually you'd be expecting some type of pick up, because that's what we expected. You know what I mean? Nothing changed. It just get worse. I just see guys getting laid off, back to back to back with families to take care of. You know, just trash. It's all trash. It's more about down talking the other guy than actually making a difference. I don't see none of their plans making any headway at all. Nothing.
Voters in Massachusetts will also decide on ballot question 2, a doctor-assisted suicide measure for the terminally ill, and ballot question 3, which would decriminalize medical marijuana. Jessel Noor, FSRN, Boston.
Across the country, some voters are reporting problems and challenges when casting their ballots, including misleading information about required identification. In Pennsylvania, poll watchers with the group One Pittsburgh told FSRN that a voter in the Swissvale district was told by a poll worker to present an ID, even though the voter had previously voted in the precinct. In the predominantly African-American neighborhood of St. Charles, Lawanga, a man who presented himself as a poll worker attempted to provide misinformation to voters. Robert Brandon is president of the Fair Elections Legal Network. His group has been tracking voting issues today. Robert Brandon, as we've heard, still some confusion about the photo ID law in Pennsylvania. What does the law state now?
Well, unfortunately, and the reason there's confusion is that the courts ruled that ID would not be a bar, photo ID would not be a requirement for this election, but he allowed that they could still ask for it in anticipation of future elections, so that it was to get people, quote, used to the idea. The problem with that is, you know, if you say, we want to see your photo ID, you need to say right away, but you don't need it to vote. And sometimes people get confused. And there, as I said, we've heard reports that outside some polling places, there were signs that still said, you need a photo ID to vote.
Another issue in Pennsylvania, civil rights groups calling on the Department of Justice to look into Tea Party or Republican Party assigning poll watchers to precincts with high numbers of black voters in Allegheny County. Are there any reports of intimidation or issues at these polls?
Yeah, there have been reports that Tea Party True the Vote poll watchers have been very aggressive toward both voters and poll watchers outside several precincts in Pennsylvania and I believe in Florida. There's also a report in Columbus, Ohio, where a number of True the Vote affiliated poll watchers were going into the polling places asserting that they were qualified by being asked by candidates, which they're allowed to do. But it turns out that the forms they submitted to be poll watchers inside the polls were in some cases incomplete and in other cases fabricated.
So for voters who are going to the polls, what should they be on the lookout for? And if they do see something that they're concerned about or they feel uncomfortable with, what should they do?
Well, a couple of things. One, before you go vote, you should know what you're doing. You should check and make sure you're registered. You can do that online, you know, on the Secretary of State's site. You need to know where you're supposed to go vote. You can do that by, again, the Secretary of State's site, or you can go to 411Vote, which is the League of Women Voters lookup site, in terms of where you should vote. And in both those places, it'll also tell you what ID, if any, is required.
And we'll remind listeners, if you see irregularities or feel intimidated at a polling place, you can call a toll-free number for advice or to report a problem. That number is 1-866-OUR-VOTE. That's 866-OURVOTE. Robert Brandon with Fair Elections Legal Network, thank you.
You're welcome.
Many are closely watching the battleground state of Ohio, where today voters in some precincts waited in long lines to cast their ballots, including students at the Ohio State campus. Questions are also being raised about problems with voter registration rolls and new software being used in electronic voting machines. The state also has a growing Latino population, which is playing an increasingly important role in elections. From Columbus, FSRN's Evan Davis has more.
Polls show a close presidential race here in Ohio, but one group that doesn't often factor into the polls is the state's growing population of Latino voters. Jose Luis Mas is a local attorney who specializes in representing Hispanic clients.
I believe here in Ohio, we are well placed in order to influence what happens in the greater community, that we have a role that is, in fact, greater than the proportion of our numbers.
According to the website LatinoVoteMap.org, there are over 120,000 registered Latino voters in Ohio, nearly 75% of whom are expected to choose Obama over his Republican rival. Immigration reform is one of the issues driving the Latino vote in this election, and while Obama has been criticized for deporting more undocumented Latino immigrants than his predecessor, many say his newly created policy, which stops or defers some of those deportations, is a step in the right direction. Meanwhile, there are questions regarding whether many Ohioans' votes will be counted correctly, as an 11th-hour change has been made in the programming of the electronic voting machines in most of the state's most populous counties. The Columbus Free Press reports that an experimental software patch was programmed into the machines late last week, a move which attorney Bob Petrakis, who is also a Green Party candidate for Congress, claims violates both state and federal election law.
The law is clear. Experimental is what you do in a few precincts, not in 39 counties, including Cuyahoga and Franklin County, where Cleveland and Columbus are, which involves 4 million voters. It seems like an awful lot of voters to experiment on with new custom secret software.
Petrakis filed a lawsuit Monday seeking an injunction prohibiting the new software and demanding a court-supervised hand recount in 5% of the precincts where the software has been deployed. But after a hearing today, a judge denied the injunction. On Columbus's predominantly Latino and African-American West Side, where there have been no reported problems at the polls so far, voters are turning out in spite of concerns about the reliability of the electronic vote counting process. Gilda cast her ballot this morning at the Westgate Recreation Center.
The issues that motivated me to the polls is to vote against Romney.
Do you feel confident that your individual vote will be counted or counted properly?
No, I don't, but I hope that it will be. My concern is what happened when Bush was running, what happened in Florida. I hope that doesn't happen this time since the race is so close.
Ohio's polls close tonight at 7:30 p.m. Evan Davis, FSRN, Columbus, Ohio.
When voting began in the swing state of Colorado at 7 a.m. today, more than half the state's voters had already cast their ballots. The presidential race is expected to be close for the state's 9 electoral votes. Additionally, there are 7 congressional incumbents running for re-election, including 3 who face Green Party challengers. Voters will also decide whether to decriminalize marijuana. FSRN's Jim Pullen reports.
Adams County, northeast of Denver, is the 5th most populous county in Colorado. The district is split roughly equally between Democrats and Republicans. Although there have been some problems here during early voting, when some election judges mistakenly insisted on photo IDs. This morning, the line at the Anythink Library was only about 50 people long when the polls opened. Carol Hedges is with Voting Heroes, a nonpartisan voter access group. She said that everything was running smoothly.
No, I think it looked great. I think it's a very professional operation. I think that there's high priority on making sure that everybody has access.
By 7:30, about 100 people were in line, but the line was moving well and voters seemed at ease. Voters expressed concern about jobs and the economy. Douglas Colson from Thornton said that he wants to get the country back on track. Although he didn't vote in 2008, he said he was committing to Governor Romney.
Jobs, big time, big time. I worked for a Fortune 200 company and I haven't gotten a pay raise for the last couple years. So even the big boys are hurting.
Colson predicted that Governor Romney would win in a surprising landslide, and the governor had other supporters in the line. But for Teresa Mueller of Thornton, foreign affairs and women's reproductive rights were the most important issues. She said she was casting her first vote as an American citizen for President Obama.
I'm actually born in Germany and I just became a citizen this year, so that's why I'm pretty excited.
The other big issue in this county, as with all of Colorado, is the amendment to make possessing and growing small amounts of marijuana legal. Most of the voters I spoke with supported the amendment, although one mother said she would vote against it because she was worried that it would encourage kids to use it. Jim Pullen, FSRN, Thornton, Colorado.
The Senate race in Wisconsin has shaped up to be one of the most expensive, most negative, and most widely watched across the country. Longtime Democratic Senator Herb Kohl retired, leaving the seat open for the first time in decades. The race pits one of the state's highest-ranking Democrats, Congresswoman Tammy Baldwin, against one of its most popular governors, Republican Tommy Thompson. FSRN's Molly Stentz reports from Madison, Wisconsin.
If voters choose Democrat Tammy Baldwin, they'll give the country its first openly gay senator. Baldwin is currently a U.S. representative from Madison. When Wisconsinites first elected her for federal office back in 1998, she set records then, too. She was the first woman to represent Wisconsin in Congress and the first out lesbian. Baldwin has largely campaigned on reforming the healthcare system and fighting for the middle class. She bills herself as a progressive fighter.
What have I done? Well, I worked very hard on the Affordable Care Act, America's new health law, that has significant sections on Medicare. I was proud to sponsor the amendment in committee that allows young people to stay on their parents' health insurance until they're 26. I've traveled to campuses across the state on the campaign trail and said, raise your hand if you have coverage through your parents. Two-thirds, three-quarters of the hands in the room usually pop up.
But if instead Wisconsin voters choose Republican Tommy Thompson, it will be the first time in more than 50 years that the state will have two Republican senators. Thompson was a four-term governor of Wisconsin before leaving to become Secretary of Health and Human Services under President George W. Bush. Thompson has largely been running on his record as governor more than a decade ago. He was considered a pragmatic, pro-business, moderate Republican.
The truth of the matter is, I was governor of this state, worked with Democrats, Republicans, and independents. Cut taxes 91 times, passed welfare reform, passed school choice, passed charter schools, passed Badger Care, passed senior care, all programs for the low income, the middle income, and everybody in the state of Wisconsin. 90% of the people in the state of Wisconsin know me just as Tommy.
But in the new age of Citizens United, Senate races are no longer just statewide affairs. Money pours in from all over the country. And this Wisconsin Senate race is no exception. Mike McCabe of the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign, a nonpartisan group that tracks campaign cash, says that outside groups are vastly outspending the candidates themselves.
That's one of the phenomena that ought to scare the daylights out of people across the country, is that we really have elections where candidates don't matter very much, that it's just the interest groups duking it out. And it's interest groups who are financed by 100 billionaires or a few ultra-wealthy interests across the country.
According to the Center for Responsive Politics, the Wisconsin Senate race is among the most expensive in the nation this year. Molly Stentz, FSRN, Madison.
Florida voters are facing the longest ballot in the state's history this year. At polling places in Tampa and St. Petersburg Tuesday, morning lines stretched around buildings with 50 to 100 people waiting at times. As FSRN's Janelle Irwin reports, 11 proposed constitutional amendments are one reason the lines are long.
4 pages. That's how long the 2012 presidential ballot is in Pinellas County. In some counties, it's more, and most of the space is occupied by constitutional amendments. Tampa voter Ted Brown hopes people take the time to understand them and that the amendments don't deter people from voting.
They're too complicated. The titles are misleading based on the text, what the text that follows.
One of them, Amendment 8, is called Religious Freedom, but opponents of the measure argue that it has nothing at all to do with that. Instead, the amendment would overturn a Florida law called the Blaine Amendment, which prohibits public funds from being used in religious schools. Even more, it would allow taxpayer dollars to be used for any religious organization. Proponents of Amendment 8 say it levels the playing field for nonprofit groups to give aid to people in need, but St. Petersburg resident Stuart Berger says state legislators are overreaching.
What I think they're trying to do is slide it in, you know, not really making sure that people understand what they're voting on. I really feel several of them are like that, and that's one of them I truly believe is, you know, it's like, oh, look, religious freedom. You know, it's like, vote for it.
Another controversial ballot measure is Amendment 6. It's an anti-abortion push that backers say would pave the way for future legislation to require parental consent for a minor to undergo an abortion. Critics like St. Pete voter Ramona Bethke say it undermines women's privacy rights and is a blatant push to outlaw abortions in the state if Roe v. Wade is ever overturned.
This is the gateway. This issue is the gateway. If this passes, it's going to open the door so wide, we're probably never going to be able to close it again.
There's also a symbolic amendment that prohibits state government from requiring people to carry health insurance. It's a direct contradiction to the individual mandate in the federal health care law. Several tax amendments also appear on Florida's ballot, and even one that changes the way a student representative is elected to the state's collegiate board of governors. All of the measures together take up 2 pages of the ballot. That's something Judy Clark says would have taken way too long to sift through at her Tampa precinct this morning.
That would have been very intimidating to me if I hadn't have had the sample ballot and filled it out first.
And how long did it take you to research everything?
Well, I probably sat over coffee for at least an hour one morning and read and reread and tried to decide what it was.
Get Out the Vote groups from across the state have tried to educate voters about the amendments. Still, some people see the confusing titles and long text and just skip over them. Jeremy Lavin, a St. Petersburg Romney supporter, didn't do that, but he also didn't mind sifting through 2 pages of amendments.
It can be as long as it needs to be, as long as some is there valid amendments.
Did you think that they were all valid?
Yeah.
Depending on the district, Florida voters are also choosing local officials like county commissioners and state legislators. And in Hillsborough, school board member Carol Curdell is running for re-election against conservative Terry Kemple. That race has been highly publicized because of Kemple's insistence that the school district not allow Muslim speakers at events or in classrooms. Janelle Irwin, FSRN, Tampa.
That's it for today's program. Join us throughout the evening. We'll have continuing election coverage from FSRN reporters in swing states, breaking news and updates throughout the night on our Facebook page and on Twitter at twitter.com/FSRN. Today's newscast was produced by Catherine Comp. Headlines editor was Nell Abram. Our Washington, D.C. editor, Alice Olstein. Our technical production team at KPFA Berkeley is Rose Katapchi and Janine Etter. Our theme music was composed and produced for FSRN by Alan Weatherhead. Thanks for listening. In Los Angeles, I'm Dorian Marina.